Hey, good people. It's your girl, Fredrika McClary Easley, back with the beautiful Bryna Dahlin for another episode of Ask the Attorney. Hey, Bryna, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. As always, have a ton of questions. But before we get into that, let's take care of a little business. So you all see I have my The People Are Blunt shirt on. Head on over to thepeoplesecosystem.com and check out all of the merch. Check out the Smoke This line. Check out the Legacy to Legends line. Check out the People Are Blunt, as well as our wellness. Okay, so head on over to thepeoplesecosystem.com. And then also, good people, we are everywhere. The People Are Blunt. Ask the Attorney Bryna Dahlin. Segment is on Spotify, Amazon Music Prime, Apple Music, YouTube. We're on all of the things, all of the ways to consume us. So if you don't have time to actually watch, but you need to listen, you are able to do that now. So please go on, like, subscribe. Do all of the good things so we can keep this going. And without further ado, we are here. Ask the Attorney. Bryna, thank you so much for coming back. As always, I know you're super busy. So thank you for giving up your time.
You know, I think we all are these days. Cannabis is busy.
So you and I were on the same page when we were kind of like prepping for this discussion. It was unprompted, but we both were like, branding, trademarks, like, let's dig into it. It's so important. And it's been kind of like milling around. So first, can we bring some clarity around, I guess I would say, the way that trademarks and branding work together and what they are?
Sure. So, you know, I would put it in trademarks. That's a legal bucket, right? A trademark, that's a legal term. It has import under the law. Whereas branding is, you know, anything that consumers can identify with your brand. It's your logo, it's your packaging, it's the look and feel of your products, your website, the names of your products. So branding can be a whole suite of things. And within that, we want to protect the intellectual property that we can. And one kind of intellectual property is trademarks. So intellectual property, you know, people use that term a lot, like, oh, what's your IP? Protect your IP. IP has value. And it means some specific things, right? It means your trademarks. And we can talk about what trademarks are. They can be logos. They can be names. They can also be, you can also have trade dress. If you've got a unique, distinctive packaging for design, for example, another kind of IP that we're not going to be talking about here today is patents. You may have, especially if you're on like the manufacturing side, you may have developed some technology that is eligible for a patent. And then beyond that, there's kind of this amorphous intellectual property that could be like your secret sauce. This is what allows you to succeed. And it doesn't fit into the trademark or patent bucket, but you don't want it getting out because it's value to you. And that's called a trade secret. And we got to keep that stuff quiet and we keep it secret. But trademarks obviously are different. They are very public. That's the whole point. You want everyone to know if you have a trademark. So trademarks are a component of your branding.
Got you. So branding is the umbrella. And the trademarks is what you want to do for different aspects or different elements that are under your brand.
Right. Obtaining trademarks is a way to legally protect your brand from other people copying it, you know, using a similar name for a similar product. So trademarks are, branding is not really a legal term. Trademark means something very specific under the law. And there's a couple different kinds of trademarks. The first kind and the most basic kind is what we call common law trademarks. anytime you put a product out there that's got a name on it and you're selling it to consumers, you've got common law rights that attach to that trademark. So you could go in a court of law and sue somebody. It gets big, complicated, but generally speaking, you can sue someone. But common law trademark rights are pretty limited. That's why we always like for our clients to get federal trademarks. Those are the best kind of trademarks you can have, because those are governed by statute. And there's a statute that says, hey, if you've got this trademark for this type of product, that is yours everywhere in the United States. We don't care if you're not selling it in XYZ state. Your trademark is good everywhere in the United States. And if someone infringes upon it, there's statutory damages that you can sue for. There's cost shifting. So there's benefits to getting a federal trademark for.
So let me ask this, though, because we're talking about federal trademarks, but cannabis is still federally illegal.
So it gets even trickier with cannabis. And I think there's a misconception around this, because the Patent and Trademark Office doesn't care what you call your product. They don't care if cannabis is in the name at all. What they care about is what is the product that the trademark is attaching to? What is the class of goods and services that the trademark is attaching to? Because in order for you to get a federal trademark, you must be engaged in activity that is lawful. The product must have a lawful use in commerce. And if a product doesn't have a lawful use in commerce, you can't get a federal mark. So you can use the word cannabis all day long, but if you try to attach, any name to a, any sort of product that would be sold in a dispensary or even a dispensary itself, you can't do it, because that is not a lawful use in commerce. And so when we're dealing with cannabis companies, we have to come up with other strategies for how you can protect your mark. And there are other strategies.
Okay, so a ton of questions from this. Okay, so first of all, if I am coming up with my logo, right? If I'm working on my brand, first question is, should cannabis, should marijuana, should weed, should those kind of terms be directly in my logo or my branding? Would you advise for that or against it, or are you neutral?
So, I would say I'm fairly neutral on this, because some folks may have a strong reason for why they want explicit references to cannabis to be in their logo or to be in their mark. And it doesn't matter from a trademarking perspective, but it can have impacts in other ways. You might have issues with advertising regulations. You might have, if it's in the name and you're banking, you might have banking issues. The third party vendors that you're dealing with who are providing you services, if you're sending them payment, their banks could get shut down because you've got cannabis in the name and it's being flagged. So there are definitely some reasons why you wouldn't want cannabis references in your name, but trademark is not one of them.
Okay. All right. So in terms of the trademarking, because we can do federal, right? You're saying we can do federal trademarking.
Yes, as long as it's not for a good or service that violates the law. So your podcast, we can trademark.
Okay. So we can trademark the podcast because I'm not violating anything.
Right.
Okay. If you have a business and you're starting out, right, you're trying to work on your brand, you're non-plant touching at this time. Say you are in wellness, so you're CBD, or say you are an ancillary provider, you're okay. So basically, it's as long as it's not plant touching, you are okay with the federal trademark.
Generally speaking, that's true. We haven't really seen like the USPTO dig down into layers of, are you aiding and abetting and supporting and all that. They haven't really been doing that. They want to know, what is the good or service? Is that good or service, a violation of federal drug law? So yes, generally the ancillary companies you can get trademarks for. Yeah, it gets a little tricky with CBD because hemp-based CBD is federally legal under like the Controlled Substance Act, the criminal drug laws. It's federally legal, but there's all these issues around FDA, and that is can also serve as a block to federal trademark registration because in the eyes of the U.S. Patent and Trade, USPTO, they're like, well, it's not legal under FDA's laws, so we're not going to let that trademark issue. And that goes for any CBD that you consume. But we don't have that same block for like cosmetics, body lotions, that kind of thing. But anything that you put in your mouth, you're going to have an issue with federal trademarks for
So
CBD as
that's
well.
interesting because both, whether it's consumption or topical, is still being absorbed in the body. So that's interesting that there's that distinguishing factor there.
Yeah, it goes
But
back to FDA law.
that's really interesting. Okay, so next question, because we start out being able to federally trademark, and look, no one knows how long it's going to take for cannabis to be descheduled, rescheduled, whatever they're going to do at the federal level. But let's just say a year or two down the line, your company or this brand does become plant touching. What happens then? Or is
So,
this something that once you trademark, you need to stay within the confines of that trademark until federalization happens?
that's exactly right. And I think that that's another good thing to point out here. I think there is a perception that once you get a trademark, that trademark is good for anything. And that's not the case. Whenever you apply for a trademark, you always have to identify your class of goods and services. So that's why you can have Dove chocolate and Dove soap. Those aren't infringing on each other's trademarks because one's in the chocolate lane, one's in the soap lane, right? So as long, so every time you apply for a federal trademark, you are going to identify the goods and/or services that apply to that mark. So when you did it originally and you were an ancillary company, you were identifying those ancillary goods. When you move on to plant touching, that would require a new mark for new goods and services, which we know we can't get under federal. So we'd be looking at other protections. We'd be looking at state trademarks, things like that.
Okay, so how easy and/or difficult is it to federally trademark?
So I would say in some respects it's easy, in some respects it's difficult. And the reason I say it's easy is because they do, USPTO does try to create a process that any person can go through. Like you don't need to be a trained lawyer. You can go on the website, you can pick your way through it and figure out how to register and what to do. They do try to make that easy for you. And so it is possible, but where it can get difficult and where the lawyers come in is that it can be a challenge to appropriately identify your goods and services, to apply for trademarks that have a likelihood of issuing. Because if you apply for a mark that is already existing for a similar good or service, and even if it's not the same mark, but it sounds similar, there's all these things that can block registration. So like when we work with clients, we're going to look at your mark. We're going to run some searches. We'll usually use a third party for that. We'll make sure it looks like the mark is even available. We'll figure out what goods and services are the best, most strategic here to give you the greatest coverage for your mark. Because remember, once you get that trademark, it doesn't apply to everything everywhere for that name. It's only your goods and services. And the what's really like the guiding principle here is, will a consumer get confused by another mark, similar name, similar goods and services? Would that consumer believe that it was actually your product? That's the kind of analysis that the USPTO would go through, and that's what we would look at. We would want to make sure consumers would not get confused with your mark, because you don't want to go through the process spend the money, and then, you know, you find out that they're not going to let that mark issue, and then you're in, you know, you have to argue and write briefs, and it's a whole thing.
So similar to the process of like getting your LLC, right? Like that research piece of just making sure that nothing already exists, nothing's okay. So
Google your name, see what else is out there. If it's out there for something that's totally unrelated to what you do, okay. If it's something similar in a similar industry, similar product type, think twice about using that name. It's really like, if you are a founder, you are creating a brand, it's so important that upfront you make sure that your brand name is available, because you don't want to go down the road. You got packaging, you're spending all this money marketing, and then you find out, there's this other product out there, and now I got a cease and desist letter, and now I've got to change all of this. And so it's super important.
And so how soon or early would you advise people to apply for trademarks, you know, as they are going down the road of branding? Mm-hmm. Is this something that you want to do like immediately, like ASAP? Because I've seen cases where there have been similar names or, you know, for similar businesses, mm-hmm. and it could literally be like a month difference between when this person filed and when you filed, right?
Yeah. So, you know, this is really a, you know, a case by case assessment.
Okay.
This is not something that, like, let's say you've got the kernels of an idea somewhere, you don't have a lot of funds and you're just really trying to get off the ground. Trademarks may not be where you want to spend all your upfront capital. Okay. But if you've got, you like, I really got something here, we're going to launch, this is happening, I need to make sure my name's clear. And if it is, you may want to look at seeing how you can protect that. And the key here is, and the nice thing about federal trademarks is you can file for that trademark before you are in commerce. So you're reserving the name, which is huge. You're reserving the name. And then even if it takes you, you know, you get extensions in 6 months increments. If it takes you a year or two to get to market, that's okay. You've reserved your name. You've told the world, I'm coming, and this is what I'm going to be doing.
Well, and that's super important, especially in cannabis with some of the state process, the timeline around the state process to get your license. I mean, it could be, if some people in California, it was like 3-4 years, you know, just trying to go through, especially if you're an equity operator.
Right. And remember, though, that those federal trademarks are not for plant touching goods. So you've got to think about my website. Am I doing education? Like, what else am I doing where I can get that federal trademark that's going to help me build my trademark portfolio? Because trademark rights do not attach until you are actually selling a product in commerce. So if you aren't able to reserve it in advance under federal law, you have to wait till you're actually selling it. And then you can get a state trademark. And then that's also when your common law trademarks attach, is when you're actually selling the product in commerce.
Let's back for a minute. Okay, let's back. So in terms of federal, you're in the infancy stages of getting your stuff together, but you know you have something, and it's not plant touching. This is something that is federally legal. Okay, and you are trying to, you know, I guess kind of build your roadmap of things that you can do now. Federally trademarking would be one of those things that you could essentially kind of check off the list.
Yes, it's called intent to use. You're filing an application, telling the world, this is my mark.
Okay.
If you never go to market with it, whatever your goods and services, if you never go to market with it, the trademark you won't be able to get the trademark ultimately, but the nice thing about the federal mark is we can reserve those marks in advance so that ownership is considered. Once the ownership rights do attach and you are in the market, your first use date goes all the way back to when you filed, even if it was 2 years before you came to market.
is there a time restriction on this? Is there a certain amount of time after filing the intent that you actually have to become
Yeah, I
operational or make
believe
good on that?
it's about 3 years, I want to say. You get
Okay.
you have 6 months to show proof that you are in commerce. And if you can't do
Okay.
it within 6 months, you can file an extension and you can file multiple extensions. So I think it works out to about 3 years.
Okay. So next question, in terms of the state trademarks, right? Now, here's an area where it appears or it would appear that if you're plant touching, but you're in a state that has a regulated market, that this may be something that like is at your disposal that you can kind of do as a first step before or until it becomes federally regulated. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, and that is the principal tool right now for getting trademark rights for plant touching products is using state trademark laws. Now, state
Okay.
trademark laws are limited compared to federal. They're only good in that one state. So if somebody, a state next door, launches the same product with same name, your state trademark is not going to protect you because it only applies within that state. But it is something, it is protection. And it's much
Okay.
easier to apply for than a federal mark. Generally,
Okay.
you file like a piece of paper, you pay a small fine, and most of these states like don't even check the marks, they just issue.
Look, the states have other things to do, okay? The states are busy. So, have you seen, and maybe not with cannabis, but have you seen where filing of a state trademark helped in maybe in a dispute or an argument at a federal level?
Yes, it can help in the sense that every little bit helps. So in
Okay.
cannabis, when we can't get that federal mark for a plant touching product, we try to build as much trademark protection as we can using other strategies. So that means federal marks for the non-plant touching using that same name. And that means state trademarks in every state that you're in for the plant touching products. So if you're in 20 states, you've got a nice big portfolio. You're covering almost half the country, maybe probably more than half the country from a population standpoint. So every little bit helps. Every little bit
Okay.
helps. And I do think that once federal legalization comes, there is going to be such a war over trademarks because now you've got all these brands that were, I was, up in the Pacific Northwest, I was down in Florida, and everyone's doing their own thing. And now all of a sudden, you've got an industry that can go national without barriers. And there's going to be a lot of fights over who gets those federal trademarks for particularly some of these more common cannabis names where you see it a lot in products. That is a reason why you don't want a cannabis in your name is you want a distinctive name for your brand, for your product, something that's going to stand out that isn't going to sound like other people.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there's going to be a big old fight when federal legalization comes. So those companies that took a really proactive approach and got as many trademarks as they could in the states, federally for whatever applied, and as early as possible, they're going to be better off.
So you're talking about these big fights. You're talking about multiple states. I'm thinking of big business, MSO. I immediately go to dollars. Okay. So when we're talking about federal trademark and understanding that you said, hey, this could be easy, it could be challenging. But I know there's a cost, right? Like there are ranges to this federal, to this state, to the common law. So again, I know it's case by case, but generally, like what are we looking at in terms of federal trademarks, a price tag attached to that?
If you do it yourself, it can be under $1,000, but
Okay.
for a single mark, but it can get higher than that because oftentimes you will want to have counsel helping you. So then you're talking about a couple thousand dollars. for a federal trademark. And that's just to apply for the mark, to prepare, to prepare the documents, pay the filing fee. If you want to run a third party search to make sure you're, you know, the trademark looks like it's available, that can be another, you know, $750 to $2,000 just to run that search. And if you apply and all goes well, you're not going to really have much of an expense after that. But if you apply and the trademark office says we got a problem with this, then the costs can really go up, because then you're responding, you're filing briefs, and the costs can go up from there.
Yeah, I mean, so it's a convenience, right? Because time is money. Mm-hmm. And so the question becomes, do you spend the time or do you pay for someone else's time? Now, here's a question, because if someone decided to seek counsel to do this, to handle the trademarking, and everything is filed, and something comes back, you know, afterwards, it's like, oh, there's a problem. I think about it as, if I get my HVAC system, you know, repaired or a new one for the house, I get a warranty. Mm-hmm. That if you know, within a certain framework, something happens and they need to come back in service. How does that work with trademarking? Like, have there been instances where the third party, you know, search, you know, maybe they went too quickly or something didn't mm-hmm. come back or whatever the case may be? Like, how does that work? Because in that instance, I'm thinking, I didn't do this.
Yeah, you're not really, look, a good search provider, a good lawyer is going to want to counsel you in advance as to the risks. Here is where we see the blocks to this registration could be, right? So hopefully you're going to know all that, and you're going to be able to make an educated decision as to whether or not you want to file, and your attorney can tell you, look, I think this should be okay. But unfortunately, we cannot guarantee the trademark office's conduct in anything. Okay. It sometimes you can get surprised. Anyone can get surprised, even though you've done everything right. So in that case, I think what's important if you're talking to a lawyer about doing this is to understand the costs up front and agree to the costs up front. If I pay a flat rate to you, what does that flat rate get me? Will that flat rate include any correspondence that you might have with the trademark office down the road? Or is that going to be in addition? If it is an addition, am I paying an hourly rate, or can we do a flat fee for that? So really having that conversation up front, so you know what you're getting into and what the total potential cost could be, and how likely is that trademark, you know, likely to issue? Because if there's if there's some significant blocks to registration, it's probably not worth going down the road to see if you can squeak it by. It can get very expensive. And the other thing that we haven't even talked about yet is litigation. Even if the USPTO allows that mark, if you've got a competitor out there that thinks they've got, oh, that sounds a lot like my mark, they can sue you. So that can be, lawsuits are the most expensive. They are the biggest headache. So it's really those third parties that you gotta watch out for, because you don't want to get in a situation where, you know, you launch a product and then you get a cease and desist letter, shut this down or I'm going to sue you.
Right. And then you have to go through, then you have to go through rebranding. Like, now you have this decision to make, you know, do you want to pay to fight it? Depending on how long your money is versus, you know, what their account is looking like.
Right.
Or do you want to deal with rebranding? Right. And now you have to like squash out, like, depending on what kind of merch, depending on the product, depending on whatever you have. Now you have to deal with that. So are there additional steps that you can take to help protect you as much as possible? And I know nothing is like bulletproof, if you will. But are there things that you can do to help in terms of litigation coming?
Mm-hmm. Like we said before, research the hell out of your product name before you go forward.
Okay.
Before you start branding anything, even if federal trademarks aren't even really on the horizon for you, make sure that nobody else out there is using a similar name for a similar kind of product. It doesn't have to be exactly the same to be a trademark violation. If it's enough that a consumer could be confused, that third party can have a lawsuit against you. So really doing that research and that legwork, and that, you know, that'll save you. Like, I've had clients where, you know, they'll send something to me and it'll take me 5 seconds to know that that's not a go. You know, right. That's what, like, you can do. You don't have to pay me to do that.
It's like, did you Google? Like, what's going on here? Like, come on, like, help me help you. It reminds me of the Eddie Murphy movie, Coming to America, where, like, it was McDowell's and you have McDonald's. And it's like, come on now. Like, y'all have the arches and everything.
No, that, like, would not be allowed. And that's not gonna fly. And that's a whole other area when you get into famous marks, because famous marks have special protection. So a brand like McDonald's, you can't copy their brand for a completely separate, totally different product. Like, you can't, like, call your, you know, weed McDonald's weed, just like you can't have, like, the Snickers bar that's really weed, that kind of thing. These are famous brands, so they have even greater protection for their marks. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a similar product or service for those rights to attach.
Okay. So one more thing, because I know we're wrapping up on our time, but I have to ask this, because when you're talking about, you hear people talking about the IP and whatever the case may be, but we know cannabis culture is rooted in a lot of collaboration, right? So you may be having a session, you may just be kind of kicking it with someone, and y'all are talking about things, and, you know, the aha moment comes that, oh, this makes sense. And it may be your idea and this person helped you flesh it out, or you were just discussing it with them, or whatever the case may be. Or maybe someone you're in business with, but you're the person who has done, you know, all of the branding or all of the marketing. And so how do you deal with those kind of, like, gray areas or murky situations?
So having those conversations up front and having protections in place up front that's going to govern who owns what, how, you know, what the equity split is going to be going forward is super important. Ideas, just ideas generally speaking, are really hard to protect. You've got to have some sort of execution. So if you are just sitting around and, you know, spitballing ideas, but it's only one of you that makes it a reality, it's going to be hard to get in on that. So having those conversations up front is super, super important. Don't wait until someone's developed something and all of a sudden they're a success when you're down the road. It's going to be really, really hard for you to get a piece of that at all. Have those conversations up front.
Okay, Bryna. So I feel like we just scratched the surface. Mm-hmm. But I know I got to let you go. So there's going to be a part two of this.
Yeah, that's a whole other issue. You know, who gets what, who owns what.
Yeah.
When you're an employee, you'll usually sign like an assignment of inventions agreement. Like, anything that you create is your company's. Yeah, it's a whole.
And that's a whole rabbit hole, right? And so it's on multiple levels. Just what do you need to be aware of? What kind of protections? What to make sure or question in terms of you signing or not signing. But I think from this, I have a couple of key takeaways. So one, I would say federal trademarks, they are worth it if you think you really have something. And for federal trademarks, unfortunately, because our federal government is freaking working at a snail's pace, it cannot be plant touching. Okay. So as long as your good product, service, whatever the case may be, is not plant touching, please be mindful of CBD, if it's hemp or, you know, whatever the case may be, because if it's attached to the FDA, if it goes into that realm, you need to be mindful of that, you need to be careful of that. But if you feel like you have something, you need to apply for a federal trademark. Okay. And as always, time is money. So if you're going to do it, you need to make sure that you are really going to do a thorough job and see this through. Otherwise, I'd advise that you see counsel and make sure that you have conversations on the front end with them in terms of cost, what's covered, all of that good stuff, right? Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, and do your research up front.
Do your research. Now, the second thing, at the state level, be aware that this is just for your state. If it's plant touching and you want to get the trademark, again, everything helps, but be aware that this is just for your state. And yep. Third, and I think that this is kind of like the common theme always, but communication matters. So if you are in partnership with someone, if you are collaborating, whatever the case may be, make sure on the front end, you have conversations about whose is whose and what is what. And that way, hopefully you'll avoid the murkiness.
Yep. Yeah, and a lot, I'll just note just how this can play out. Sometimes in companies, the IP is held by a completely different company. So you may think you have one thing, but ownership of the IP and the trademarks is sitting somewhere else. So really, we can get into that more too, but really making sure you understand where ownership lies in the groups that you're working with and talking to, and what's yours, what you actually own.
Okay, so part two of branding and trademarks is going to be where ownership lies. Is going to be at all levels. How are you protecting yourself? How are you aware? And how are you, I would say, leveraging and capitalizing on your IP? Those are the two I have, but I'll have more, but that's going to be part two. So Bryna, as always, appreciate you coming through and blessing us with the knowledge. This was, my mind is still swimming just in terms of what makes sense, how it makes sense. But I hope that people got something out of this. And so before we get out of here, do you have any additional parting words?
I think you said it. Communication is key. Do your research up front.
Look, y'all heard it, people. Like, subscribe. Stay tuned monthly. We have these segments. I have these segments with Bryna on The People Are Blunt, where she is, look, giving y'all gems, dropping gems for free. So if you're not picking them up, that is your
fault. It's not legal advice. This does not create an attorney-client relationship.
It is not. Disclaimer. But it is also, you know, knowledge from an educated source. And of course, with all things, what we do is our research, and you know, we take everything and make sure that we completely understand. But this is very helpful information. And so again, we are on all platforms. We are on YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Music, Prime Music, Apple Music. We are on all the musics, all the good things. And so check us out, People's Ecosystem. Check out our merch, our wellness. Again, segments with Bryna every month. I also got to shout out Savelle Michelle for my custom leather hoops. I love me a good hoop.
Those are leather?
Yes, they
Ooh,
are.
I like that.
Thank you. Until next time, good people, stay blunt.